This happened when I first started babysitting. My parents were drug addicts, which didn't leave me any option other than working part-time jobs to save up before I move out. I was coming home from a car wash gig that my friend got me. After waiting for nearly half an hour, when my dad didn't show up, I started walking towards home. As I walked, the dense woods on both sides of the road created a spooky vibe around me. I was about to take a left turn when my eyes went to a big tree. Something was stuck on that tree, and the wind made it rupture. I walked close to it and saw an advertisement for a missing person. The advertisement looked frail. Underneath that, I could see another page. I pulled off the missing person pamphlet and saw an ad for a live-in nanny. I wasn't sure I should apply for it or not, so I took the pamphlet with me. I thought I would decide after reaching home. When I got home, I saw smoke coming out of our kitchen window. I immediately rushed in and found my mom laying on the kitchen floor unconscious and my father passed out on the couch being high as a kite. They were both lucky that I reached home in time, or else our house would have burnt down, taking my parents with it. I got the situation under control and woke up both of them. That was the first time I screamed at them. You guys are sick. You know what? Don't have kids if you can't even stand straight. I bolted to my room and started packing my bags. The next morning, I called the client and luckily I got the job. I got into a cab and started towards a new beginning. After continuing on the highway, the cab driver took a right turn and we reached near a dusty road leading into the woods. When the car reached near a huge iron gate, I finally realized how rich these people are. It wasn't just a house. It was a mansion. I pressed the button on the gate, and a man spoke from the microphone attached to it. Please wait. It took a few seconds more, and the iron gate slid, making a rustic metallic sound. An average-height old man dressed like a housekeeper came towards me. Welcome to the Whistling Woods residence. Please, come with me. The man took my luggage and started to walk towards the house. I followed him, while wondering how huge this property was. A beautiful marble fountain stood in the middle of the green, mesmerizing garden area. Walking on the artistic path made with white pebbles, we reached the front door. The man twisted the doorknob, and I took my first step into this gigantic house. I saw a tall, handsome man, probably in his late 40s, standing near the intricately crafted wooden stairs and smoking a cigar. He exhaled clouds of smoke and said in a deep voice, "I am James Harshall. You must be Bethany. My wife has talked to you earlier."
"Yes, thank you for having me."
Mr. Harshall smiled and said to the housekeeper, "Take Miss Bethany to her room." He then turned to me and said, "Go with him and freshen up. We will meet you at lunch." I nodded my head and silently followed the old man. The house was so silent that I felt embarrassed every time my footsteps made a creaking sound on the wooden floor. My room was downstairs on the left, across from the living room. I have never been to such a luxurious bedroom before. The soft pillows and huge bed made me uncomfortable to even lay my fingers on them, fearing. The housekeeper kept my bags near the table and said,
"Lunch is at 12:30. Please, press the white switch if you need anything."
After a soothing hot shower, when I reached the dining room, I saw Mr. Harshall was already sitting there. The table was filled with food and some of the dishes looked out of my league. I sat down and he said, "There comes my wife and our son, Noah." I turned and saw a frail, petite woman entering the dining room with a creepy doll. The doll was dressed like a gentleman. I said in a low voice,
"I don't see your son, Mr. Harshall."
He gave me an embarrassed look, and Miss Harshall spoke in a squeaky, loud voice.
"Are you blind? Here's our son, Noah."
And placed the doll on the chair opposite me. I felt extremely humiliated and blind at the same time. I said in a fumbling voice,
"I'm sorry, Miss Harshall. I failed to notice him."
The entire lunch went like a nightmare. At first, I thought it must be a prank or something, but no. Miss Harshall was actually treating that doll like a living child. She talked and chuckled while feeding the doll soup. I could barely eat. Soup and chunks of food were dripping all over the doll, but Miss Harshall didn't even bother. Her behavior pointed out that she was mentally unstable. No one said a single word the entire lunch, and I realized it was a huge mistake coming here. After lunch, Miss Harshall took me to her son's room and handed me a list.
"Every day you must follow this schedule for Noah. If you miss a single duty, he will get very angry. And the last thing you will want is an angry Noah."
my heart started beating faster as I could believe my eyes. This woman is completely insane. I took the list and headed to my room when I met Mr. Harshal on the way. He apologized for his wife's behavior and finally revealed what the hell was wrong with that woman. 2 years back, Ms. Harshal gave birth to a baby boy. They named him Noah. When the kid was 1 year old, he crawled down his crib and came near the stairs. Before anyone could catch him, the kid slipped and rolled down the sharp, edgy stair and died. Since then, Ms. Harshal lost her mind and grabbed Noah's favorite toy, claiming her son is still alive. Mr. Harshal heaved a sigh and said, "Believe me, Bethany, I hate pretending in this insanity, but I have already lost my son. I can't lose my wife." I felt bad for the couple, and being out of options, decided to play along too. I started taking care of the doll, as in Noah, following the list I was given. I woke him up in the morning, bathed him, changed his clothes, and even took him for a walk in his stroller. But as time went by, weird things started to happen. One night, after dinner, I took the doll to his room for his bedtime. The last duty of the day included singing a lullaby to Noah, and the list had a strict mention that I must finish the entire lullaby before leaving him for the night. I continued the charade for almost a week, but on the fifth night, I finally gave up. I was tired from putting all my energy into caring for a doll and wanted to go to bed early, so I hummed some lines of the lullaby and then got up to leave. I threw the doll inside its crib out of frustration and turned off the light of the room. As I came back and laid on my bed, I couldn't help but think how long I'll be able to put up with this nonsense. Thoughts were going inside my mind and I fell asleep. Don't remember the exact time, but I woke up feeling small fingers tickling my feet. As I opened my sleepy eyes, I saw a black figure sitting on my bed in a crawling position. I said in a drowsy voice, "Please let me sleep, Noah," and turned to the other side, just when the figure giggled in a very spooky manner, and I sprung on the bed. I switched on the bed lamp and found myself alone in my room. What the hell did I just see? I got up from the bed, drenched in sweat, and went to the washroom to splash water on my face. With the first flash, I heard Miss Marshall's voice outside and peeked from the bathroom window. Miss Harshal ran into the woods screaming,
"No, baby, no! Come back to mommy!"
I ran immediately outside thinking she's having a breakdown. I saw her going to the left side of the garden, so I ran in that same direction. Her red nightgown blinked in the dark, and without giving a second thought, I followed her into the woods amidst the middle of the night. After a certain point, I kind of lost her in the dark and stood clueless wandering in those woods. There was no one around me. The hooting of the owls mixed with the howls of the coyotes made me feel like I have stepped into a world where I don't belong. I turned back and got face to face with Miss Harshal. She stood like a maniac with bloodshot eyes staring right into my soul. Grabbing me by my shoulders, she screamed at me,
"What did you do? What did you do to make him angry? I told you to follow the list. Why didn't you listen to me?"
She turned towards the dark woods and screamed in pain.
"Noah, darling, come back to mommy. Mommy will take good care of you.
Miss Harshal, please control yourself. Your son is not alive. You have to accept it. Please stop this madness."
"What are you saying? Can't you hear his cry? Listen."
I was going to say how sick this entire thing was, but my lips sealed right away. Behind me, a cry of a baby took place. The entire forest shook with that angry yet painful sobbing. The echo of the cry made my head throb in pain and my heart exploded in horror. But I couldn't move. I stood there as the psychotic cry got louder and louder. Miss Harshal laughed like crazy seeing my numb face.
"Look, now she believes you are alive. Are you happy now? Look what you did to my son. You made him cry."
I turned around and saw a child standing some distance from me holding that doll. The child had no eyes. Darkness poured from his empty sockets and black vomit came out of his mouth as he expanded his jaw almost to his chest. I screamed at the top of my lungs and fainted on the floor. The housekeeper found me unconscious in the woods the next morning. I had a high fever and Mr. Harshal called my dad from my phone. My parents came and picked me up from their house. I didn't speak, didn't go out for a month. I never talked to my parents about what happened there, and they also never came to discuss any of that. I guess they were just glad that they found their daughter alive. Till today, I often wake up hearing that angry cry of a child accompanied by Miss Harsha's voice.
Noah, baby, come to mommy. I'll sing you a lullaby.
Hey guys, before starting the next story, I would like to suggest to you guys to subscribe to my channel if you haven't yet. And if you have already subscribed, then you guys are awesome. I never liked my babysitter growing up. It's not like I hated her though. Her name was Sarah, and she didn't really do much aside from lounge around my living room, eating my food while my parents were away. I used to think that being a teenager must have been easy if they could get paid for doing nothing like her. The last time she ever babysat me was when I was around 11. Tim, my little brother, was 8 at the time, while my older brother Thomas was 13. Thomas had been telling my parents ever since he technically became a teenager that they should let him take care of me and Tim instead of hiring Sarah to babysit. Turns out, my parents really should have listened to him. My parents were going out for their monthly date and called Sarah over to babysit like they had 100 times before. And just like 100 times before, Sarah immediately hopped onto the sofa and started playing with her phone the moment my parents left. She only got off of the sofa when it was time to feed us. She microwaved some leftovers and we all chatted at the table during dinner. Or rather, my brothers and I chatted amongst themselves while Sarah texted someone on her phone without paying any attention to us. I assumed it must have been her boyfriend. The few times I've heard her talk on the phone instead of text, she used words like babe or lover boy while making kissy sounds into the phone. Disgusting, I know. I did notice something strange about her that night, though. She wasn't quite as distracted as she usually was. Every now and then, she'd actually look up from her phone to look out one of the windows, almost as if she was trying to look out for us like she was supposed to. Once dinner was finished, she got right back onto the couch with her phone while Thomas and I were left to do the dishes.
You notice something weird about Sarah?
I asked Thomas as we were washing and drying the dishes we'd been eating from.
Not really, why?
Well, she keeps looking up from her phone and glancing at the doors and windows. It's like she's actually worried about us, which is weird since it's Sarah.
Thomas let out a small chuckle.
The house could be on fire and she wouldn't bother to put it out. I'm sure it's nothing.
Yeah, you're probably right.
I pushed the thought out of my mind and focused on finishing the rest of the dirty dishes. I couldn't stop thinking about it, though. Long after Sarah sent the three of us to bed, I lay awake thinking about what could have made the ever apathetic Sarah bother to care about us. I was just about to forget about it when I heard glass shattering from downstairs. The sound woke Tim up and I immediately got out of my bed.
What was that?
Tim asked as he rubbed his eyes, still half asleep.
I don't know, I replied, but I'm going to check it out. You just stay right here.
I eased our bedroom door open and crept past Thomas's room past the stairs with my heart beating out of my chest. I was barely able to take 2 steps when I froze in my tracks at what I saw through the railing. A man was standing in the middle of the living room with a brown cloth bag slung over his shoulder. He had no mask and was walking around like he owned the place, rummaging through the drawers and cupboards, trying to find anything valuable. Lying on the ground was one of my parents' vases, shattered into 100 pieces on the floor. I guessed he must have broken it while trying to stuff it in his bag, which caused the sound that woke us up. Not knowing what to do, I rushed to Thomas' room and opened the door. He was lying awake on his bed, but had his headphones on, so he must not have heard the sound of the vase breaking downstairs. He looked surprised when he saw me and took off his headphones.
Hey, you all right there, little bro?
There's someone in the house,
I blurted out in horror. A seriousness spread across Thomas' face, and he immediately grabbed a baseball bat from beside his bed. Go be with Tim and call the police.
But,
no buts. I'll handle this. I could only assume he must have been trying to prove to himself and our parents that he could take care of me and Tim. Still, I couldn't bear to leave him to face our intruder alone. I texted the police and went to watch from the stair railings as Thomas went to confront the burglar. The burglar was in the middle of emptying a safe when Thomas rushed at him with his baseball bat raised high in the air. He didn't even have time to react before Thomas bashed his head in with the bat. I felt relief washing over me when the man fell onto the floor
with blood gushing out of the bruised side of his head. But Thomas didn't stop there. He kept wailing on the burglar, bringing his bat down again and again on his head, his chest, anywhere he could hit. I couldn't tell if it was righteous anger or fearful adrenaline fueling his swings, but he was starting to scare me more than the burglar lying crumpled on the floor.
"Thomas, that's enough!"
I cried with tears in my eyes. Thomas stopped his baseball bat mid-swing. Had he gone through with it, I was sure that the twitching burglar on the floor would have died. I saw Thomas take a deep breath, which seemed to calm him down. He turned to me saying something, probably an admonishment for not doing what he said. Yet, all I could hear from him was a faint gurgling sound as a knife pierced his throat from behind and exited through the front of his neck. Behind him, holding the knife, was Sarah. Her mouth curled into a vicious snarl and eyes filled with rage. She pulled out the knife and a geyser of blood spurted from the hole in Thomas's neck. He fell to his knees and gripped his open throat, struggling to breathe through the blood that filled his lungs. She didn't even give him a chance. She brought her knife down on him over and over again, screaming obscenities as she did, calling him a brat for hurting her boyfriend. I immediately realized what was going on and sprinted back into my room. I locked the door and cowered under the bed with Tim up until the police arrived in response to my text. Sarah and her boyfriend were both arrested and taken into custody. Thomas was taken out in a body bag. Sarah was never worried about us. I was stupid to think otherwise. She just wanted to make sure none of the neighbors were still awake so that nobody would see her boyfriend once she let him in the house to rob us. I still haven't forgiven my parents for hiring someone like Sarah to watch over us. And honestly, I don't think they'll ever forgive themselves either. I took up babysitting in college to make some extra money. It was either that or a part-time job at McDonald's, and babysitting gave me a more flexible schedule. Being the eldest of four siblings, I was pretty good with kids too anyway, so it seemed right up my alley. While I enjoyed my time working as a babysitter for the most part, there was this one gig that soured it for me forever. The client was a rich couple who lived in my neighborhood. They'd seen my ad in the local newspaper and called me one afternoon as I was lazing about in my room playing video games. "Hello, is this Joan?" asked the mother from the other end of the line. "I need someone to babysit. Are you available this Friday by any chance?" "Yeah, I'm free." I got up from my bed to focus on the conversation. "How many kids do you need me to babysit?"
"Just one."
She paused for a moment before continuing. "Well, two, but you don't have to worry about the other one."
"Can you please elaborate on that?"
"Well, one of my sons is 10. He's the one I need you to look after," she explained. "The other one is 17, but I really don't trust him to look after his brother. He's special." From my experience, special is usually a parent's code word for some sort of disability, mental or otherwise. I didn't mind, though. It just meant I'd have to be a bit more attentive than usual. Still, I wanted to know what I was getting into beforehand.
"That's all right, ma'am. Is there anything I should know about him, though?"
"You don't have to worry much about him. He usually keeps to himself in his room. Just leave a plate of food in front of his room at around 6 o'clock and he'll be fine." We talked a bit more and I agreed to sleep over for the night as she and her husband were out on their overnight trip. Once we settled on a price, I went back to playing video games without a second thought, not knowing what a huge mistake I'd just made. When Friday came, I went to the address the mother provided me on the phone. I knocked on the door and seconds later was greeted by a kind-looking couple who introduced me to their young son. His name was Danny and seemed well-behaved enough, if not a little quiet. They then pointed me to the room of their reclusive teenage son, whose name I learned was Ryan. Apparently, Ryan lived in their basement. A little odd, but I didn't think to question it. I just assumed he must have liked the lack of noise in the basement. Once they got the ground rules laid down, I said goodbye to the parents and tried to hang out with Danny as best I could. He didn't make it easy, though. He hardly ever made eye contact with me, and whenever he did, I could see a strange sadness in his eyes. I'm nothing if not stubborn, though. Eventually, I got him to open up to me bit by bit by talking about his favorite shows while he drew fan art of them in the living room in colored pencils. "I've watched so much SpongeBob SquarePants and Sesame Street during my time babysitting little kids that my knowledge of them was near encyclopedic.
Relating to quieter kids like Danny is much easier when I'm able to understand their hobbies and interests. When dinner time rolled around, I decided to order us both some pepperoni pizza, much to Danny's delight. When the pizza came, I paid the pizza guy with some money the parents had given me for takeout and brought it inside. Before we dug in, I put two slices of the pizza on a clean plate and poured an ice-cold glass of soda for Ryan. I set the plate and glass in front of Ryan's room and knocked on the door. "Ryan," I called, "I'm leaving your dinner outside your door in case you want it. It's pizza, so you should eat it while it's hot." I heard thumping movement behind the door, so I knew that Ryan must have heard me. I didn't wait around to see him open the door, though. If the reason he kept to his room was because of some undiagnosed anxiety disorder, I didn't want to accidentally cause him a panic attack with my presence. People who spend all day in their room like he does probably dislike having to meet new people anyways. As I was walking away from the door, I heard it open and shut behind me. Satisfied that Ryan had his food, I went back to hanging out with Danny while chowing down on the rest of the pizza. We were laughing and joking about his favorite episode of SpongeBob when a look of concern suddenly came across his face. "Hey, you all right, Danny?" I asked. He looked me in the eye, and I could see that they were watery with a sadness that I couldn't figure out the source of.
"You're going to stay with me tonight, right?" he asked. "You're not going to go anywhere?"
I was a little taken aback by his question and brushed it off as him overthinking because he shouldn't be. "Of course I'll be here," I reassured him. "Promise. And if you're ever worried about anything, just come to me. I'll be right on the couch until your parents get home. All right?" His expression brightened, and we were soon back to talking about cartoons again. That night, I slept on the couch with my phone in my pocket in case the parents called me. Everything seemed normal. Then, out of nowhere, I was ripped out of my sleep by a firm hand covering my mouth and nose. I tried to scream, but no voice came out. I struggled to breathe, but couldn't through the unseen stranger's vice-like grip. An arm wrapped around my throat, making it even harder to breathe, and I could feel myself being lifted up from the couch. I was dragged away from the living room, kicking and clawing at my attacker's arm in my attempts to breathe. I felt my nails digging into flesh, but whoever the person was didn't show any signs of stopping. I caught a glance of the basement door opening before I was tossed inside. I tumbled down the stairs and landed on the hard wooden floor on my shoulder. I coughed and gasped for air in an attempt to regain my bearings. When I finally looked up from the floor, I saw what I can only describe as a bedroom from hell. Every piece of furniture looked like it had been made from bone or leather. Not just any bone either. The leg of the nightstand looked like it was made from someone's spine and bones. The leather covering of the bedside lamp had a human face sticking out of it. Even the sofa seat looked like it had been stitched from the skin of a dozen different people. It looked more like a demented workshop than a place any sane person could live in. Blood-stained work tools that must have been used to create the twisted furniture hung on the walls. I turned to look up the stairs and saw a filthy teenage boy with stringy black hair and blood-stained clothes smiling at me with rotten green and yellow teeth. His demented bloodshot eyes were fixed on me as he descended the stairs.
"Such pretty skin."
He grabbed a rusty hammer from his wall of tools without slowing his approach.
"I can't wait to sleep in it."
I finally regained my voice enough to let out a hoarse scream. Not a second later, he grabbed me by the throat again with one hand.
"Don't worry,"
he whispered into my ear, his foul, humid breath almost making me puke into my throat.
"I'll make you into something beautiful."
He raised his hammer to strike. I closed my eyes and prayed that I'd die quickly. But the blow never came. Instead, I felt his grip release my neck, followed by a shrill scream that wasn't my own. I opened my eyes and saw Danny standing behind the teenager, holding the same color pencil he was drawing with that day. Half of it was buried into the teenager's shoulder, causing him to cry out. Seeing an opportunity for escape, I kicked my teenage attacker in the crotch. While he was doubled over in pain on the ground, I grabbed Danny and ran out of the house as quickly as possible. Once we were both safely in a neighbor's house, I called the police, who arrived in a matter of minutes. They arrested the teenage boy, who was identified as Ryan, Danny's reclusive older brother, and they searched his entire basement bedroom. They found what I saw and confirmed what I didn't want to believe. Inside of his room were dozens of furniture made from human bone and leather. Some of the leather was traced back to grave robbing incidents in the area, while some were far too fresh to have been cut from a corpse. Under his bed, they found a blanket made entirely out of human faces. It was missing one last piece in the corner. Had it not been for Danny's help, my own face would have been added to it. Last I heard, Ryan was thrown into a mental hospital, where hopefully he'll stay for a long, long time.